As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens by TheAthletic.com. I am Marc-Antoine Godin with Arpin Basu on this Monday, December 12th, a few hours before puck drop at the Bell Center, where the Canadiens will face the Calgary Flames. Arpin, how are you today?
I'm good. It's weird recording on a game day, but yeah, you know,
that's okay.
Monday games always actually mess up my whole week. I just feel it just totally throws me off. Today we were at the morning skate. Was convinced it was Tuesday the whole day, until just before we did this. Really, I thought it was Tuesday. So here we are. It's game day, and so we have a few things we're going to talk about. I thought, for starters, because the Calgary Flames are in town, and because Sean Monahan had such an emotional night in Calgary so recently, which really showed, you know, how important he was to that community. You know, it just strikes me that since he's been gone, his importance to the Canadiens has become quite evident.
Yes.
Like, it's really, he became an incredibly important player to this team very quickly. For a guy who wasn't sure to start the season, no one was really expecting a whole lot from him. He's a crucial part of this team. Like, they really miss him.
They do. And I mean, and we don't know how long they're going to miss him. He's still in his walking boot. Saw him after the game on Saturday, and it doesn't look like it's a day-to-day thing with him. Although, you know, as sometimes hockey players, as soon as they're able to lace up the skates and put the foot in the skate, whether or not they're able to walk afterwards becomes a secondary point. But still,
I mean, he was in that walking boot in Calgary.
There you go.
Before and after the game. So yeah.
But I think, when you mentioned his importance to the team, I think it's funny because the Canadiens started the season with five centers on their four lines. So they were able to slot two centermen on the same line. But all of a sudden, you know, they put Doc alongside Suzuki and Caulfield. Monahan is out of the lineup. And right there and then, all of a sudden, the Canadiens are short, you know, in the middle. And it's an issue because, you know, in the longer term, there's one or two things that is going to need to happen. Either they will need to find someone else to complement Suzuki and Caulfield, and then they would be able to to leave Kirby Dach at center, or they will need to find somebody else to play second line center next year. And I think this is why the option of re-signing Monahan is somewhat on the table, because let's face it, Christian Dvorak won't be that guy. Jake Evans won't be that guy. And none of the prospects at center that the Canadiens have would be ready to be that guy as soon as next year. So, but in an immediate fashion, not having him in the lineup really puts them behind the eight ball.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. I mean, it's interesting that tonight St. Louis is putting Dach back on the wing with Suzuki and Caulfield. And the two options you brought up, I think the bigger thing that the Canadiens need to figure out is who's going to play with Suzuki and Caulfield. And this has sort of become what was an eternal question of who's going to play with Shea Weber, right? So we have this, there's just this inability to find an appropriate winger for Suzuki and Caulfield, one that lasted only two periods against the Kings. And it was interesting, like this morning, you know, Martin St. Louis, when asked, well, I asked him, you know, what is it? Is it how Dach looked at center, or was it how Suzuki and Caulfield looked without him that's leading you to put Dach back with them? He didn't really want to say one or the other, but he just said, the overall group looked better when Dach was with Suzuki and Caulfield. And so, to me, he's kind of doing an end around and answering the answer to the question is that he didn't like how Suzuki and Caulfield looked without him. And so, you know, he tried Josh Anderson there. I remember I just turned to you and showed you the numbers that Anderson and Suzuki and Caulfield put up together this season. Hoffman, everyone's been tried there, except for Juraj Slafkovský. And
Joel Armia.
And Joel Armia, who we'll get to in a second, and who, you know, obviously I had suggested putting there. But Slafkovský seems to be, you know, I would think that this would be a time to capitalize on Doc's confidence. I thought Martin St. Louis made a great point prior to the last game where he said, you know, he had initially said that maybe not taking faceoffs is sort of a burden that was lifted from Kirby Dach. He was able to play freer, able to play with more confidence, not have that kind of looming over him. And that now he saw it as less of a big deal because he had built that confidence. He had shown what he could do as a player. He showed that he can still help the team even if he's losing faceoffs. He was just a different player. The building that needed to happen with him after his time in Chicago had happened. And that so that wasn't as big of a factor. But, you know, I think there was still some value for this team because of the situation they find themselves in, to allow that to run its course a little bit and allow Dach to play center for more than two periods and maybe use that as an opportunity to give Slafkovský a shot there. It's a tricky one because of how difficult their assignments are, how much ice time they get. But the same benefit that Kirby Dach got playing with them, I could really see Juraj Slafkovský benefiting from that as well. He's a guy who would take a challenge or a responsibility like that, and he would embrace it, you know, and just, I know he's 18. I know they're trying to slow play him, and I actually agree with everything they've done with him. I agree with not giving him too much too soon, but this just seemed like a perfect marriage of need, him earning it, and development all wrapped into one. I just thought this would be a good shot to do that, not only for Slafkovský, but for Dach as well.
Yeah. Well, it was clear during Saturday's game against Los Angeles that Suzuki and Caulfield played better in the third period with Dach on their wing. But when you use a combination like this because you're behind in the game and you're playing catch up, and then after telling everybody don't read too much into it, you come back 2 days after and you choose to keep that certain combination to make sure that you get ahead early and you have a good start, well, it means that this is your primary option. This is not just a situational thing where, well, we made that move because we were down and we needed to provoke something or any of that sort, because you know, prior to that game against Calgary, that's what he intends to do. But you say you were saying the priority in your mind is to make sure that they find the right complement to Suzuki and Caulfield. But what do you make of the idea that more and more in the NHL, we're talking more about duos rather than lines. And as long as Suzuki and Caulfield understand each other and are able to generate offense, you know, at various degrees, no matter who's playing with them, Doc has been the biggest contributor playing with them. There's no doubt about it. But Suzuki and Caulfield by themselves as a duo are effective. So wouldn't the focus be, let's try to develop another duo somewhere else? And to that extent, look at Saturday's game and say, well, maybe if Doc and Slafkovský could develop over time, if they're given some time, they could develop another potent duo so that the Canadians don't rely always on Suzuki and Caulfield. I feel like this is also a direction that they could choose to take.
They could, but I think St. Louis' answer is telling in the sense that Suzuki Land really drives the bus for his team. And that's obvious, but it's not just their offense and it's not just their ability to make a difference in a game, but it's clear that he felt the rest of the team played better as a result as well. Which I find interesting is that it's this whole notion that a line can build momentum that the next line can pick up on, changing the momentum of the game. They're all factors that go into it, but really, I mean, the best part of Martin Saint-Louis' answer is they didn't really have any data or anything tangible to go on. This was a gut thing that he decided. Yeah. Sometimes a coach has to go with his gut, and that's what I'm doing. And I respect that. You know, I agree. Coaches do need to make gut calls. You can't have a rational explanation for everything. But it does leave a hole at center because, you know, now you have Rem Pitlick centering your fourth line. You have Jake Evans centering a line with Slafkovský and Anderson. You know, not ideal. And so, making sure Doc is developed into a center at some point is something that's going to have to be a priority. But just to get back to Monahan, though.
Yeah, because that was the starting point of the conversation.
Well, yeah, I mean, you just think of Sean Monahan, like he's their best faceoff guy.
Yeah,
plays on the penalty kill, and is a pretty effective penalty killer. Is an underrated, like, kind of crucial aspect of their power play. Like having a guy on the goal line who can make plays from that spot, find guys. There's a few times he's been able to find Caulfield through the crease almost. For a one-timer on the other side, he's got sort of the brains to make decisions from that spot. It's a dangerous area of the ice on the power play. So losing that element hurts the power play to some extent. Also opens up Suzuki for that shot from the right circle or the bumper, wherever he happens to be set up. And then at 5-on-5, as we've just mentioned, he kind of balances out the whole group in a certain way. Makes things easier to slot together, but is also the type of player that, you know, Martin St. Louis wants a lot of his guys to be, namely Juraj Slafkovský, Josh Anderson. He wants like his bigger guys. You could throw Joel Armia into that, although I think this is something he does relatively well. As a guy who can go and maintain possession in the offensive zone, extend shifts, play down there, force the other team to defend, create mistakes and create offense that way. So in that sense, he's a good example for some of the other forwards on the team that I think Martin St. Louis is trying to get that out of their game. So, the question becomes, and this is already the question for a lot of people, and you alluded to it, all of these things should make him very attractive to other teams. And so the same sort of debate comes up is seeing how crucial he is to the Canadians. And if the Canadians are, let's say the Canadians are 4 points out of a playoff spot on February 15th.
Mm-hmm.
And Monahan comes back, let's say in a week, stays in the lineup until then, plays the way he's been playing, is as important to the Canadian success as we've seen him to be over his absence, frankly. Does this little stretch and does this kind of lineup confusion that's been caused by his departure make the Canadians think a little harder about trading him? I'm still in the camp that they have to trade him. If there are teams willing to give up assets for him at the deadline, they have to trade him. But does this make them think twice?
I hope not. We had that discussion before, and I'm totally with you on that. I think that the Canadians would be better off, getting a good asset in return, not only because of the asset, but also because of what it might cost them to lock him up by for his next contract. So it's it could be a risky move to keep him long term. Of course, with the Borovat situation in Vancouver, with Jonathan Toews, who might be moved at the deadline. God knows what's going to happen with Ryan O'Reilly with the Blues. There is a certain number of options at center that are probably more interesting than Sean Monahan for teams that are looking to add depth. But at the same time, the Canadians will be in a position where they could take on salary, retain maybe 50% of Monahan's deal and find a taker for him. I would go that road personally, but as long as this whole issue goes hand in hand with developing Kirby Dach at center, because if you don't, mm-hmm. then the problem remains the same entering next year. And of course, I'm probably looking too far ahead here, but I would not be surprised if when we come next summer, the whole Pierre-Luc Dubois situation is brought up again. And we hear once again rumors of him coming to Montreal because he's a little bit like Dach in the sense like he could play center and he could play the wing, but he would definitely be a top six forward and he would be very useful in that spot and you wouldn't have to worry about it. So Monahan, because of his health, because of his age, I will acknowledge everything that he brings that's positive for this team. There's no denying that. But when push comes to shove, I think that the Canadians need to keep their eyes on the prize, keep focused on what this season is about. And as far as I know, they're still in asset collection mode. And he's still the guy who's in the best position to bring them some interesting ones at the deadline.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's just, in a way, maybe his absence is actually increasing his value. If other teams see to what extent they have the Canadian, his absence has kind of thrown the Canadians for a little bit of a loop. But anyhow, we'll see. Listen, I want to touch on this quickly. We're recording this in the 2 o'clock hour on Monday afternoon. So the waiver period just passed. Evi Tolvanen was placed on waivers by the Nashville Predators, and he was claimed by the Seattle Kraken, which means the Canadians, two things actually. One of the most analytically inclined teams in the NHL decide to claim him. And two, it means that the Canadians and a number of other teams, 22 other teams actually, if I'm not mistaken, if I'm counting correctly, passed on him. And so do you feel, in light of the current injury situation, in light of everything, that he's a highly talented player? He's only 23 years old. Hasn't worked out for him in Nashville. But do you think the Canadians should have put a claim in on him?
Well, it certainly would have been intriguing. I think the guy has a dangerous shot, very dangerous shot. He hasn't been able to parlay that into like real significant production at the NHL level. The Preds were in a cap squeeze with their injuries on defense. They lost two guys in the last game. They needed room to call up some defensemen and Tolvanen, who was scratched in his last seven games. Well, he ended up being put on waivers. So that's their thinking behind it. Listen, Tolvanen, he's in the second second year of a three-year deal at $1.45 million for a guy who was not playing in Nashville. It's a lot of money. But at the same time, I think, you know, we've brought up the point very often that the Canadians trust enormously their development system now. And he seems like the sort of guy that a team could say, well, we're going to make him a reclamation project and we're going to be able to extract maximum value out of that kid. At 23 years old, there is still a chance that he could, you know, pan out somewhere else. It's going to be the Kraken will be only his second organization. But the Canadians in the situation that they were in, what made him interesting in my mind, it was the fact that they have very little offensive contribution from their depth players. You know, the fourth line production has been abysmal so far this year, and it would not have been too difficult to find some room for him, if only because of injuries. I mean, right now, even though the roster is at 23 guys, Monahan has not been put on IR. David Savard has not been put on IR. So one of the two, once Jonathan Drouin comes back, well, he would likely take the spot of one of those two. But still, there's wiggle room there to work with, without having to send anybody down or put anybody in on waivers in return. But when you look at Tolvanen versus, I don't know, maybe my equation is too simple, but when you look at Tolvanen versus Pizzetta or Tolvanen versus Pitlick, I think that there's probably more to gain, if only from the offensive aspect of it. Now, there's Pitlick can play center, and right now it's useful. Pizzetta brings an toughness element that Tolvanen doesn't, and actually too few people on the Canadiens organization can actually bring. So I think that plays into Pizzetta's hand. But also there's the fact that if they choose to make changes, you know, at the bottom of their roster on their fourth line and whatnot, well, they can look in Laval also and say, well, we're going to give a shot to Jesse Ullonen. We're going to give a shot to Anthony Richard, guys like that, prior to trying a guy from the outside. And I suspect that was the thinking with them choosing to pass on Tolvanen.
Yeah, and I also just think that they have, you know, Tolvanen would basically be getting, you know, a very brief tryout in all likelihood. I mean, because if he did stick, great, you know, and there's lots of reasons to think that maybe he wouldn't. I mean, his shot is legitimately NHL, like that was always his calling card. Not really a sniper's shooting percentage though. Over, you know, he had a high one in his rookie season in Nashville a couple of years ago, but that was only on 65 shots. He scored 11 goals on 65 shots, which is pretty good. Last year he got up to 150 shots, scored 11 goals, so shooting percentage basically cut in half. And this year he was, you know, 19 shots on goal, 2 goals. You know, if the other elements of his game aren't there, he seems like the type of guy, like if he's not scoring, he's not useful. So This is, this I imagine was a factor in the sense that, okay, maybe we grab him, but is it really fair to give him 3 games? And if he doesn't show anything, then just put him back on waivers. Is it worth the trouble? You do have one of, if not the AHL's leading goal scorer, Anthony Richard, sitting in Laval. Having a tremendous season his first year in the organization. And as you mentioned, Ullonen, it just strikes me as, you know, the reason why they didn't want to put Pizzetta on waivers is because they didn't want to lose Pizzetta on waivers. Now, you can question the wisdom of that or whether there's any reason to be concerned about that, but he's a style of player the Canadiens don't have. And so it just seems like they do have, you know, this injury situation will alleviate itself. They have a bulk of forwards that they snuck Rem Pitlick through waivers, but this is an administration that seems loath to do things like that. When you have a player, they want to keep them. So I think this would have just added to that, but maybe an interesting gamble. We'll see what happens in Seattle with him. Maybe the Canadiens will regret it, but I see lots of reasons why they would have just decided to stick with the status quo.
Yeah. Well, they have a couple of guys who are not super helpful if they don't score already on their roster. So I guess bringing one guy, even though he's younger, he'd be on team under team control for a longer period, and there is probably ways to develop further. Maybe that they just didn't want to go to that trouble.
So it's very possible. And so again, we'll see.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You mentioned how difficult it's been offensively on the fourth line. And I wanted to talk about that a little bit because it has been, frankly. I mean, it's you look at... Look at Jake Evans, who spent the bulk of the season on the fourth line. I believe our colleagues at RDS have been on his case of late because of a lack of production.
they're always on somebody's case.
They're always on somebody. And it's fine. That's their job. It's not a knock. They do have to. It's not easy to come up with someone to criticize every single night. And so eventually your time will come. Your turn will come. If you have to produce a post-game show every night and blame something on someone. So, you know, you have Josh Anderson, Jake Evans sitting at no goals, four assists. You mentioned Pizzetta, who's been, you know, lately in the lineup, one goal, no assists. Rem Pitlick has a goal, no assists. And there's Yoel Armia, no goals and two assists. And Yoel. Armia things. You know, longtime listeners of our podcast know that we have a soft spot for Yoel Armia because he's a supremely talented player. And yes, his production, his impact never equals his talent or the combination of his talent and his size and all his other skills, his shot. It will never equal that, but usually still makes him an effective player. And no goals through 16 games. It's been hampered by injury, got off to a slow, miss the start of the season as a result. Kind of another one of those jumping on a moving train situations where we saw with Edmondson, who had needed some time to get the rust off. Matheson, same deal. Now he's out again. Armia was kind of in the same boat. And so before the game in Edmonton, Marty St. Louis was asked about Yoel Armia, and he said, I feel like he's about to get on track. Like we're about to see. He's gonna take off here. I can feel it. And at the time he had no points. And so that night wound up getting an assist, a really smart shot to the outside pad of Stuart Skinner that Dadonov was able to bury on the rebound, wide open net. Got the Canes back in the game, down a goal in the third period. He rings a zinger of a wrist shot off the post. Really had a good game. I had a chance to talk with him this morning after the morning skate, and it was honestly like it was a very normal start to the conversation. Like, how are things going? How do you find things are going? And you know how he is. Like he's thought about it for a bit, and the way he's very deliberate in his answers. And then he kind of looked up and he said, "You know, it's difficult," and so. We talked about it and, you know, his lack of production is really weighing on him, mentally quite heavily. I got the impression. And you know, no matter how well you're playing, all NHL players are going to want to see points on the board, eventually get the reward for however well you're playing. So even if Martin St. Louis said, I feel his game's coming around, he's going to start to produce. the player himself thinks, well, that's all well and good, but I need that production.
I need results. I need results.
I need more than that. And so Army is aware of it. He knows. And listen, it's not as if like I hate plus minus as a stat, but you know, he's got one of the worst ones on the team, close to it. You know, among forwards, only Dadonov's worse than him. It's actually Dadonov and Evans. So it's not as if they're keeping goals out necessarily while filling, you know, while other guys are scoring. So it's but it's an interesting case in the sense that, you know, he feels the lack of production and to be honest, like of Jake Evans, Joel Armia, Michael Pezzetta, and Rem Pitlick, the one guy who has more expectations on himself than any of them, because he does have some established track record in the NHL, is Armia. And he admits that he can be very hard on himself. And so this is where the hiring of Jean-Francois Menard as their performance coach came into play. For those who might have missed our notebook recently, we had an item on where the Canadians are at in terms of Jeff Molson's sort of priorities that he laid out when he fired Marc Bergevin just over a year ago. And one of them was to address mental health and athlete and wellness for the players. And so far, the one response to that has been the hiring of Jean-Francois Menard, who's kind of a professional performance coach, works with a number of Olympic athletes, started his career actually working with the Cirque du Soleil, which I find really interesting, because if there are people who might have performance anxiety and who need to perform on literally a stage on every single night with a high degree of difficulty, it would be Cirque du Soleil performers. And so he's a full-time employee of the Canadians. And Joel told me that
he worked with surgeons also and with businessmen and businesswomen. He's got a whole array of
You know, Toronto Blue Jays were a client. He's got all sorts of a wide array of high level performance people that he coaches and that he allows to get the best out of. And so, so Army has been talking to him. I asked him about him. He's like, yeah, he talks to us sometimes. I'm like, yeah, but have you specifically talked to him? He's like, yeah. And I found it helpful. And he said, it's important, you know, I have to do the things I can do to perform on the ice, to better perform on the ice. That means taking care of my body. That means doing video, all those things. But you also have to make sure the mental side is taken care of. So here we have an actual example of a player who is, well, we'll see to what extent he benefits from it, but he's using the resources that Jeff Molson committed to providing to his players, just over a year ago. So we'll see if Mr. Bernard can work his magic with Joel Armia. Like if he goes out and gets a hat trick tonight, which is unlikely, then maybe he can take the credit for it.
So does Jean-François Menard work strictly one-on-one, or does he?
He does not work strictly one-on-one.
He'll talk to the group too, right?
He'll talk to the group, and the way Joel described it, he said he'll talk to the group like relatively regularly. Like he has regular sessions where he addresses things with the group, but he is also available to anyone who wants his services or wants to talk to him about something, or wants to follow up on something they heard in the group session. They can go to him and talk to him about it. And that's what Army has done. And so I don't know if other players have done that. I'm sure they have. But it's interesting to hear straight from a player who's going through, let's say, performance anxiety, who has someone like this, a resource like this available to him to help him work through it and work through, you know, because the big challenge Armia said was to come in and be positive, you know. And I looked up and his Bell Center locker is right next to Kirby Dock. You know, I think he, when you think about it, and Kirby Dock is going through this great period in his career, probably the best period of his career. Do you really want to be coming in and sulking that your own stuff isn't going very well when you have this young guy just starting his career, so important to the team, and he's going through a great time? So he mentioned how important it was for him to come in and be positive every day, and that if he keeps doing that and he keeps working hard, he will get the results, he'll get the rewards. But that's like some mental gymnastics that having some guidance to do that It's probably pretty beneficial. So it was interesting. You know, Armia comes off as a guy who doesn't talk a whole lot, and he doesn't, but he can be thoughtful and he can talk. He just does it at his own pace. That's why he doesn't look that good on camera. But for a guy like him to reach out to this guy, you know, Jean-Francois Menard, and say, you know, I think I could use a hand here, is an encouraging sign. You know, I would hope more guys, I would think more guys on this team, are using that resource just to help prepare mentally for on a day-to-day basis.
What's interesting also with having like a mental performance specialist on board is that the Canadians over every year, they've been facing boo-birds every now and then. You know, when the team doesn't perform, you can hear boos at the Bell Center. And it had not been the case so far this year, until Saturday. And that was really striking to see, oh, this is something we haven't heard in a long time. The fan base has been so patient with the team so far this season. And I think that everybody's on board with what's being tried and what's being developed. But for a moment, with the lack of execution, with the fact that the Canadians had so much trouble just getting out of their end, I mean, the five guys on the ice had a shift like around two minutes 50 towards the end of the first period, and you could hear the boos. But this is before this season; it was a common occurrence, and I think this is something where you have some fan bases that are more tolerant or more patient than others. But this is an aspect where having someone who really works on the mental aspect of performance, this is an issue that you have to deal with when you're a Montreal Canadian. And it has not been the case so far, you know, it's something that they would have to face. But down the road, I'm sure that this is going to be a talking point. And how do we as athletes or as a group react to fans being impatient and demanding results right away? Because they're in the building that night, they paid top dollar that night, and who cares how it went 5 days ago? Tonight I'm in the building, tonight I want a show, and you're not giving it to me now, and I'm letting you know. So how do guys react mentally to that? I know that in the past you've had players that express themselves, say, well, it surely doesn't help us in any way, but it's an interesting resource for the Canadians to have, and maybe eventually down the road to address that.
Just, I mean, further to that, and I know that we made reference to it in the notebook today, you know, Bo Horvat was super interesting in Vancouver on this road trip, talking about a lot of things. And, you know, his contract situation, the constant sands through the hourglass soap opera that the Canucks have become, Bruce Boudreau getting called out by his GM, the media eviscerating the team at times. I mean, deservedly so, you know, I mean, and the flashpoint for all of that, for the fan anxiety, the media criticism, everything that's going on, and even the player anxiety in the room, as it turns out, is Bo Horvat as the captain. He was talking about how he needs a solid network of people, how his wife is probably sick of hearing him talk about it, how he needs people that he can vent to because everyone else in the room is venting to him, how he had to stay off social media, how he has to get his entourage to stay off social media, how, like, it's just this laundry list of things that he needs to be able to focus and perform the way he's performing this season on a nightly basis. And it struck me. I mean, this is why he's so impressed with what Nick Suzuki's doing as captain, not realizing that Suzuki is not being a captain in that kind of environment. But I mean, you talk about a guy who could use a guy to help him. I mean, not to say that Bo Horvat's not performing, he's having the best season of his career, but players in that environment, you know, that support,
it's tough waters to navigate.
It is. It's difficult, and it can be that it can, and I guarantee will be that difficult in Montreal again. This is a very unique time in this team's history where the fans, the media, the players to some extent, the coaching staff, management, everyone is agreeing that they are a few years away from being anything close to being a real competitive team. And everyone's accepted that. And so, you know, hearing Nick Suzuki say that this has made his transition to being captain a lot easier. It's actually easier for a young team to be in an environment like this because those expectations are not there. They're not getting many difficult questions after games. There's not a lot of media pressure on this team, if any. You know, aside from the aforementioned criticism of the fourth line on certain television outlets, he mentioned there's a real recognition there that the way the expectations have been shaped around this team are not only helping Suzuki to be captain, but are helping guys like Caulfield, like Doc, Gouley, all the rookies on defense, like all these young players being expected to play important roles. It's helped by the fact that they're not expected to win. And if they win, it's gravy. And frankly, if they win, some people get upset about it. So it really is an ideal environment for younger players to develop and grow in. And hearing Bo Horvat talk about the environment in Vancouver only makes that point even stronger.
Yeah. So just to add some context, since you mentioned the hiring of Jean-François Ménard, let's not forget that when Jeff Molson fired Marc Bergevin and replaced him with Jeff Gorton, he mentioned in his press conference that was on December 2nd.
November 29th, was it not?
Well, actually, yes, that's true. December 2nd was when Gorton actually talked. But yes. November 29th, that's when Molson talked. And he said, we've begun the process of formalizing a medical performance team. The focus will be on our players off the ice. We'll be adding resources for players and staff throughout the organization in all areas related to athlete wellness and mental health. And we see these additions as a critical component to our success. So that's what led to that hire. Okay, before we get to our voicemail, as usual, we're very happy to have our listeners contribute and sending us their questions. Before we get to that, just a quick look at the schedule, because the Canadians, it's relevant, especially this week, because Canadians are playing 4 games in 6 nights, and they just had a couple of weeks where they had 2 3-day breaks in between games. It's a luxury in the schedule. They're not going to have that for the rest of the season. It's going to get very hectic there in a hurry. Our colleague at La Presse, Guillaume Lefrançois, had some revealing numbers regarding the schedule, because up until now, the Canadiens' opponents were they played on average for 543. And the average record of the teams that the Canadiens have yet to face for the rest of the year stands right now at 573. So, you know, much, much better performing teams that are still to be faced for the rest of the schedule. And another sign that the schedule was somewhat easy for the Canadiens is that they played 8 games against teams that are part of the top 10 in the general standings, compared to 11 games against 10 of the worst teams, the top 10 worst teams in the league. So there's going to be gradually a shift towards more difficult opponents and a bigger workload. So how do you see the upcoming season, the upcoming schedule, both for this week and maybe for the rest of the month, Arpin?
Well, I think if you looked, and Martin Saint-Louis admitted that he doesn't do this, but if you looked at the schedule at the beginning of the season, as is the case every season with Montreal, you look at December and you're thinking, okay, that's going to be difficult. So the difference is that at the beginning of the season, when you looked at that, you're like, okay, well, that's where they're going to like totally cave into a bottom 5 position, because them being where they are right now wasn't anticipated, you know? So it's now this is a situation where, you know, perhaps the market correction is coming. It's a very difficult stretch. There's very few home games. There's difficult opponents. Everything you just mentioned, that trip between Christmas and New Year's is always a killer, made even more difficult by the fact that the Florida teams are so competitive, although the Panthers are right neck and neck with the Canadiens in the standings right now. It's going to be a difficult time. And so I think this team continues to prove me wrong.
Yeah.
I've been saying over and over again that there's a market correction coming. All the underlying now, everything that we can reasonably predict about this team would suggest that something's going to happen where they're not going to keep collecting wins at the same rate, that a losing streak is coming, which it hasn't really come all season. I think this is where it comes. But again, maybe they've proven me wrong. I've thought it before. I thought the losing streak was coming before. I thought Western Canada was going to be that. And it wasn't. They came out 2-1-1 on that trip. And I thought that was going to be the start of something bad for them, and it wasn't. So let's see. I got to give them some benefit of the doubt at this point.
Well, it's like Michael Burry in The Big Short, right, who keeps thinking that the mortgage bubble will burst, and it doesn't, and it doesn't. And he thinks, well, it's the numbers say, they scream that it's going to happen, and at some point I'm going to be proven right. And eventually he was, but it just took longer than he expected. So maybe that you're the Michael Burry of the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah, maybe.
Except that you don't have your own stock in it, which is probably the best.
Yeah. It is for the best. But yeah, it's but you know, I mean, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen now. Like, honestly, if the Canadiens get through this stretch with roughly the same kind of record they have now, just above 500, then I'm going to stop expecting it to happen. That's basically my take on it. Like, if it doesn't come now, then it's not coming. And then power to them, you know, for not having it come. Like, then this is just the resilience we've seen through 27 games is what this team is. And so this is going to be the ultimate test of that. We'll see how they do it. We'll see, you know, it was interesting to have that there was an optional morning skate Monday morning. Very unusual coming off a day off, but I think that's Martin St. Louis' attempt to sort of mitigate and manage the players' energy going into this very difficult stretch of the schedule where there's going to be a lot of travel. This week is very busy with 4 games in 6 nights, as you mentioned. Injuries, this is kind of when injuries start to happen, is when the schedule gets really difficult and rest becomes a premium. So a lot of things kind of coming for Montreal here. It's another big test, but I think it's kind of the ultimate one. It's the ultimate one to say that, okay, we're not what you thought we were. Mm-hmm. We're this. And so now we're going to show you that we're this. We're not amazing. We're not great, but we're not the worst team in the league.
No, that's clear. And no, whatever the market correction you see there, it's, I think that it's been proven that they're far from the worst, team in the league, but as the season progresses, they'll be faced with the question of what do we do with the players that we thought we'd be trading. We opened the show discussing Sean Monahan a little bit.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
We have a question on our voicemail from Scott, who's asking, well, what about the goalies? So let's listen to this.
Hi, guys. My name is Scott. I'm a big fan of the podcast. Many thanks for taking our questions. Last Friday, you guys got asked if the Habs should go out and get a goalie, secure a goalie via trade for the season. And I'm actually curious to hear the opposite. Do you think that trading one of Sam Montembeau or Jake Allen maybe is the best chance the Habs have to get another first-round pick in this year's draft or an interesting prospect. Really curious to hear your thoughts on that. I'll just add that I played in many charity hockey tournaments against Arpin, and I can confirm that if the Habs are looking for a big bruising defenseman, they should give him a call. Thanks so much, guys. Have a good day. Bye.
Well, thank you, Scott. So if you've played hockey against me, then you know then you know to what extent I'm full of hot air. Like, I'm just some kind of I sit on here every week, twice a week, sharing my opinion on these elite players, and I can barely stand on two skates. Well, I'm not quite that bad, but anyhow, it's I think Scott has more perspective on my degree of expertise on this than most of you do. But on the goalie front, yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, it's the goalie market's always weird, you know. Like, I mean, and I'm kind of the mind that if you're not going to get really good value for either of your goalies, you're better off just keeping them, because it's until the NHL adjusts and realizes that goalies have a certain trade value, even though they're so unpredictable and even though they can vary from year to year. I mean, look at what's going on in Calgary with Markstrom right now, and you just never know, which is why teams are loath to invest a whole lot in acquiring a goaltender. Until that changes, I think they should just keep the guys they have. Like, there's a value to having two solid goaltenders that I think, you know, especially when you're trying to develop young players, that there's value to keeping the pucks that should stay out of your net, out of your net.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if the idea is trading one of Allen or Montembeau in order to get a first round pick or a decent prospect, they're not going to get a first round pick.
No.
For Jake Allen.
Of course, if that happens, then where do I sign? It's an immediate yes, but I don't think that's
good. But the market for goalies is always too soft for that to happen. Even Marc-André Fleury, when he was playing for Chicago, it was on an expiring contract. He was traded for the Wild for his second round pick. Well, it was a conditional pick, but it ended up being a second round pick. But you look, I mean, in the past five drafts, the goalies that changed hands, there was not, I mean, Matt Murray was traded from Pittsburgh to Ottawa for a second round pick too, and some B-level prospect. And others were part of salary dumps. It's not great value. And the thing is, everybody's looking for an upgrade in goal. The league is all out on offense this year. Teams are looking for goalies who could help them tilt in their favor. But the question is Jake Allen really that guy? If I'm putting myself in another team's shoes, I'm looking at, you know, there's 28 goalies, all right, that have played at least 15 games so far. And among them, Allen is dead last for 5-on-5 save percentage. He's at 890. And that's thanks to a very difficult month of November. But from the Canadiens' perspective, before the season started, Allen was on an expiring contract. And instead of signing him to a two-year extension, the Canadiens could have decided to trade him right away, which would have been a tanking move, or to hold on to him and move him at the deadline. So they made the decision that Allen was not going to be moved for future assets, because replacing him later by an equivalent option would cost them more money. So they committed themselves to Allen. They chose that path because they thought they were better off with him. But now nothing stops them from changing their mind. Allen's deal right now, he doesn't have a trade protection or anything of that sort. But in order for them to change their mind, he would have to play at a much higher level than this and present himself as this amazing value. But if that would drive his value up, but that would also convince the Canadians that they made the right call by extending him.
Well, it's just that I don't know how much that's going to drive his value up, because Jake Allen is Jake Allen, and Jake Allen's, he's fine. He's a very good goaltender. And everyone knows he's a very good goaltender. So even like the numbers that he has right now that you just mentioned, I don't know to what extent those impact Jake Allen's value, because I think he's built a certain reputation of what he is. What he is an extremely luxurious insurance policy. That's what he is. He's not someone you would feel any sense of confidence going into a playoff series counting on to be your number one goalie. Mm-hmm. He is a guy that if you think you have a chance of winning it and you don't want a goalie injury to derail that chance, you go get Jake Allen just in case.
Right.
And that's not going to get you a whole lot on the trade market. You know, teams do not give up first round picks for luxurious insurance policies. Seconds, you know, the Minnesota Wild acquired Fleury to be their starter. And so they paid a second round pick for him. Mm-hmm. So no matter how Jake Allen performs in my mind between now and February or late February, whether he continues to go up and down and have some difficult games combined with some good games, which is, you know, not ideal. It's not the consistency you want to see in a goaltender for a playoff team. Whether he lights the world on fire, whether he is terrible, I don't think his trade value changes all that much. It really, because he is who he is. And he's perfect for the Canadiens. Is he perfect for a team that has serious playoff aspirations? I don't think he is. Not as a primary option.
No.
He's a secondary option, and a secondary option gets a secondary option return on the trade market. And I don't think the Canadiens benefit from that. I think they're better off with Jake Allen and Net than they are with maybe the third or fourth round pick that they would pick up or a B-level prospect and a third. That's kind of the best case scenario I could see in trading Jake Allen. And frankly, the second year in his deal makes it more complicated.
The fact that he's got two. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah. And Sam Montembeau is just not proven. I mean, I can't see any team giving that much to get him when he's an unproven commodity. So the idea is not bad, but I just don't see the long-term benefit. Because what Jake Allen and what Sam Montembeau and even what Caden Primo provide the Canadiens, they provide the Canadiens with a window in which to find a goaltender. They have to find a goalie by the end of next season. They need to develop a goaltender that will be ready to perform when this team is ready to perform, which is probably 3, if not 4 years away. So, which means that goaltender has to be found soon, probably in the next draft. But that's what Jake Allen is. He's a buffer.
Yeah. But my point of saying, well, if he could show within a few months that he's got a value contract, is because there's so much inconsistencies among goalies, even those who we think are established ones, from 1 year to the next, that a team that's looking for a goalie right now will say, well, I'm going to go with the guy who's got it now. But at the same time, I mean, the fact that he's signed for 2 more years and he's not that hot to begin with, it doesn't make him a very attractive commodity.
No, and he has a big sample size too. I mean, you're going off not just 2 months. Yeah, you're not.
Yeah.
Any team, especially if you're acquiring a player for 2 more years after this one, you're not going to go off 2 month sample to make that decision.
No. All right. So thanks for your question, Scott. If you guys are interested in leaving us a voicemail and ask us a question, you can do so by calling 646-847-9404. That's 646-847-9404. All right, Arpin, I think that'll wrap it up for today. We got a promotion code for people who are not subscribed to The Athletic. So if you aren't and you're regular listeners, we've got a deal right now. You can go to theathletic.com/athletic support and you can get a subscription for $2 a month for the first year. So esteemed listeners of our podcast, you can jump on that offer. I think it's worth it. So
yeah, absolutely. $2 a month. That for those who are less inclined in math comes out to $24 a year.
Okay, hold on a second. Let me grab my calculator.
Check my math.
Yep.
$24 a year.
Yeah, I got it.
That checks out.
Checks out.
Good offer. TheAthletic.com/athletic support. Check that out if you haven't subscribed yet. And we will be back on Friday with the spot at the tick. Until then, enjoy your week and we'll talk to you then.